Ahoy, welcome to Music Ally Focus with me, Music Ally's editor, Joe Sparrow. And in this episode, we're joined by Rachel Strathberger, who is one third of the Black Eyed Peas management team. So we take the opportunity to talk to someone closely involved in the management of one of the world's best-selling and well-known groups and find out what she has learned by doing it. All of that in 1 minute. Now, if you're not familiar, each Music Ally Focus episode analyzes one meaningful music business story at a time. And so this podcast is also designed to be fairly quick. It should take about the same amount of time as Brendan Kelby could hypothetically stack 150 dice with 1 foot. Brendan stacked 5 in 1 minute with 1 foot in 2022. Brendan, it must be noted, is a serial record breaker and loves stacking dice. So you do you, Brendan. Now, the Black Eyed Peas, talking of breaking records, have sold an estimated 80 million records and are one of only a handful of artists to have simultaneously held the number one and number two spots on the Billboard Hot 100. They've also headlined the Super Bowl halftime show. Rachel Strathberger spoke to me about the challenges of being part of the management team of such globally recognizable artists. And also she spoke about what the modern requirements are of managers for artists of all sorts of sizes as artists start to demand different kinds of attention and security around their career. She also talks from her personal perspective about the changes in the management industry over the years and what skills managers will need in the next 10 years as the industry undergoes rapid change. So, and friends, you must forgive me, let's get it started in here. So I'm extremely happy to be joined by Rachel Strathberger, who is one third of the Black Eyed Peas management team, alongside Seth Friedman and Paulo Molina. Hello, Rachel.
Hello, how are you, Joe?
All the better to see you. It's great to have you here. Now, this is a great opportunity, actually, because we know we have a lot of our listeners are working in management. So I really wanted to take this chance to talk to you as part of the management team for one of the, you know, the biggest acts in the world, and also looking at what you've learned along the way and trying to understand how things change when you reach that level. But before we get into that, can you just give a little bit of context to our listeners? Who are you? What is your background? And what's your experience in management?
I come from a marketing and legal background in a corporate world and a corporate business. And then I started in 1998 in the booking world. And then from there, I moved to the record industry in 2002. And then from 2002 to 2008, that was 8 years, I did full-on management. And really, really enjoyed it. And then afterwards, in 2017, I built up my consultancy company and was more data-driven promotion, where I was touching all types of aspects of social media and digital and promotion, and specifically rolling out records. And then from there, in 2020, went back into management with the Black Eyed Peas management team.
Right. And out of interest, what was it that made you transition from a sort of corporate world to the music world? Was it a sort of realization moment you wanted to do something else? Or
No, it was completely by luck or chance. I was always very passionate about music and I really enjoyed music. I was going out clubbing, raving at the time. So no, it was a friend of a friend that asked me if I could help out. And that's how I landed into the music industry.
Good. That's how I think jobs should come about on a sweaty dance floor. That sounds fun. Okay. So, let's start talking about the Black Eyed Peas. People are aware of them in every country. You've got that background of progressing through all different levels of management to get there. But what are the challenges then for our listeners who perhaps they're not managing a group like that? What are the challenges of being on the management team for a highly successful and globally successful group?
Challenges. There's many, many challenges. So there's challenges of management, but then there's challenges of managing a group, like you say, Black Eyed Peas. I can't really pinpoint something specific. I mainly take care of everything that has to do with digital branding and marketing. And then, as I was mentioning before, and that's also based on my background, I would take care of all the rolling out of the records. So that's something pretty specific, how we roll out a record. But maybe part of a management team, the challenges would probably be the same as every other manager's, which in today's world is really maintaining relevance and probably also adapting to technological changes, because there's so much going on in our world that that is definitely a big one. And then also we've seen in various genres of the music industry that the very importantly is the health and wellness of the band members or the artist himself. And then again, with Black Eyed Peas being a band of three individuals, we need to balance the individual, but also at the same time, the group needs.
Yeah. I mean, that's interesting, isn't it? Because you've got a huge artist at that level, and I guess that your timescales become very long in terms of planning for next album cycles or next project cycles. But then also you've got, as you say, three members of the band who are all sort of outspoken individuals and are successful in their own rights. So how does that work in terms of how do you make a project happen when you've got three big individuals and a big brand, if you like, and you have to align all that to make something happen at a fixed point in the future?
Well, you mentioned something about time frame that are long. Unfortunately, in Black Eyed Peas world, they're not. So okay. I would love them to be long, but they're not always very planned. Obviously, we have to plan touring with a lot of time in advance. And yes, we have to play around with three different calendars with, as you perfectly mentioned, three different agendas and schedules and priorities. We know that Will has TV shows in the UK. Apple does sustainable farming in the Philippines. Taboo is very passionate about his indigenous project, which he's taking worldwide in different countries. So obviously, yes, for touring, we have to try to schedule as much as in advance as possible. But unfortunately for music, it's always a bit more improvised.
You've managed, I guess, artists of different, I'm going to say stratas, you know, different audience sizes, different success levels through your career. And now you're at the stage where you're managing a globally recognized artist. What are there sort of strata changes? So does management work slightly differently when are managing, co-managing the Black Eyed Peas compared to managing maybe a solo artist who has a significant but smaller following, for instance?
Yes and no. I personally don't think so. I think it really depends on the artist and what the artist is willing to do and not to do, specifically in promotion and touring. And then obviously also where the artist is in his or her career. But with the Black Eyed Peas experience that I have had, obviously budgets change. That's definitely something that changes between an upcoming artist or an established artist. And of course the team sizes would change, but expectations will probably change too, because expectations come with experience. And I think also when an artist has had 20 plus years of experience, they will have different types of expectations that sometimes don't always, let's say, meet today's trends and today's realities.
And what about that budget thing then? Is it liberating to have a very large budget to do things, or is that also pressure?
I think it's both. It's pressure and liberating. I have had in the past sometimes the possibility of doing really great things, but we didn't have the budget. So in those cases, it's amazing to be able to, you know, come up with a marketing idea, with a strategy, and be able to roll it out and be able to give it all the chances the project deserves.
Yeah. Then what? You've obviously got a great perspective here of working with different artists over a significant period of time and working with this very large artist. So for our listeners who are, you know, managers themselves of whatever level, what are the solid, like, vital lessons that you have learned from being part of the Black Eyed Peas management team that they could take something from and use themselves?
Well, I mean, I think one important thing is that whatever artist you manage, small or big, it's still a human being. And being a human being means many things, means it's so many emotions, means, you know, expectations, disappointments. And that is definitely something that whatever the size of the artist is, it's a fact. An artist is a human. But I do think that a manager must be wearing multiple hats, and obviously balancing expectations, but also creative, and also has to have a very strong business idea and legal, but then also making sure that the well-being of the artist is taken care of. You know, this is something that I already mentioned earlier. I think it's something that managers absolutely have to take full responsibility and make sure that well-being is a priority.
Is that something that you've noticed artists being more vocal about in recent years? We've obviously heard plenty of stories in recent years of artists saying, I'm going to have to cancel this tour for my well-being, or I'm going to have to step back from social media because it's too much pressure. And they're being more open about it. I think in the past they would have said, oh, you know, I have an operation on my vocal cords and I'll be back in 6 months kind of thing. But are artists talking to you more openly in those private conversations when you're making plans, saying it's a priority for me to make sure that you look after my mental health and make sure that I'm not being burnt out or something like that?
Well, I think it's like you perfectly mentioned. I think artists dare nowadays talking about it openly. Artists can communicate because they also communicate differently. 20 years ago, artists didn't really have social media platforms the same way we do now. And maybe there was less of a bond between fan base and artists. So I think artists are more vocal about it because they can be more vocal about it. With the piece, we obviously, you know, are very cautious about this. Thanks God there are three people and not one artist, which sometimes that also gives a big, you know, makes a big difference to if it's a solo artist or if it's a band. But I also think that they are so experienced that they know what they can do and how they can do. And they will already in advance say, no, I don't think I'll be able to do this. It's a too long run. Or, you know, they will be very vocal about it because they know themselves, which maybe, and this is where the advice goes to managers that are managing artists that are younger or upcoming, that want to do it all and that have this whole big, terrible FOMO impact or influence. So maybe that's really the advice that I would give a manager that manages an artist that is younger.
I mean, that's something that everyone can relate to, which is when you're really driven to grow or succeed, you say yes to everything. It's a common mistake. And I've done it. We've all done it. But saying no is hard, right? And saying no must be really hard when you've got an artist like the Black Eyed Peas and you've got potential brand partners or something, or partners out there putting a lot of pressure on you to say yes. And there's also perhaps a big check attached to it as well. So do you have any advice on saying no?
I mean, I think you need to be a good human to be able to be a good manager. And I think you need to have ethics. And that's also something that I hope we are going to touch in our later questions. But I think the future is about being ethically correct, is about having that consciousness and respect towards the artist, but the industry and the fans. So yes, I agree.
Let's talk about the fans then, and also how they're connecting with the Black Eyed Peas and their catalogue. They're not heritage artists in the sense that, you know, they're still touring and they're still releasing music, but they do have this very large and popular catalogue of hits known around the world, as we've said. And one of the high value areas in the music business generally at the moment, and that is growing, is sort of rediscovering extra value in those catalogs and introducing hits from the past to a new audience. The obvious example is music being discovered through TV shows or TikTok or something like that, and a brand new audience finding them. So how do you do this with, very specifically, with the Black Eyed Peas, to introduce older hits to a new audience?
So you're right. If one thing is to scroll when through their Spotify hits and you see this huge catalog of all their different music that they've released in the last 20 plus years. But then it's a whole different thing when you see them live perform. So picture this, a 90-minute set, and where they're just nailing it, where they're coming up with these classic songs that everyone knows and all these fresh tunes that they've just released in the last 2, 3, 4 years. And the incredible thing is when you see everyone literally singing to each and every song. And if the crowd is young or old, they'll be singing to each and every song. And that's where you see that, yes, they are a catalog artist, but they still have relevance, today's relevance. And at the moment, we have not re-released older tracks with, let's say, a 2024 taste to it. But we are discussing this internally. And also, TikTok also did it a bit for us with all the sped up versions.
Right.
You'll find classic versions of Black Eyed Peas that are sped up that we didn't release, but the people have and are enjoying and probably maybe don't even really know that it was a Black Eyed Peas original, or they do, you know, but they know the track.
Yeah. You know, as someone who is old, I still can't really understand the slow down, sped up thing as something that is appealing. But that, you know, I respect the kids that they do like it. The obvious solution when a sped up version of a song takes off is to say, "Oh, we'll rush out an official sped up version." But that's a sort of short term gain, isn't it? How do you transition those new fans who are discovering the sped up version on TikTok to, like you say, that being fans of the new releases, the old releases, and bringing them in further?
The how is still something that is always pretty difficult, because these new fans will consume in a very short time frame. There's going to be a trend, that trend is going to hype, and then it's going to be on to the next trend, right? So as you perfectly say, yes, we would maybe brush it out and release it officially, but by the time we might brush it out and release it officially, the trend's already over, and the kids are to the next one, right? So I think what would be interesting doing, and this is something that we are discussing internally, is what other artists have done. Taylor Swift has just done it, re-releasing older things with today's touch. I personally come from the electronic world, so my take would be having remixes of artists that have their fan base, that have a different reach than ours, and give them the job to bring the track to a new and next level.
How do you balance the public perception of them in a broader sense so that they are seen as the still current artists that they are, that are releasing new music, but without ignoring this deep catalogue, right? So how do you maintain that balance of saying, well, they're not heritage artists, they've got this great catalogue, but they're not heritage artists, and they're modern and they're releasing stuff now. So how do you navigate that? You've got the weight of all those tracks from the past, but you've got these frontline releases as well. How do you balance that in terms of how they're perceived?
Well, it is about striking the right balance, isn't it? I think the Peas have this incredible gift of staying fresh while they still honor their roots. When they perform, you really see that it's not just a trip on memory lane. They really showcase this evolution. They bend this old and new very, very seamlessly. As I mentioned before, when you go to concerts, you see how they manage to have this mix between the classical hits and the new bangers. And they are literally telling a story, which that story is a Black IP story. It's the 25 years of music story that resonates really with everyone. You absolutely have to see them live, and you'll see where I come from. I knew Black Eyed Peas because obviously I've been listening to Black Eyed Peas when I was younger. But then when you experience them, it's a whole different thing, and that's the way they do it, and they have this way of keeping innovating and keeping collaborations going with artists that are in a complete different genres. They will work with different music styles. And I think that's how they stay relevant. And that's because they always bring something fresh to the table.
So yeah, give Peas a chance, I think is what you're saying.
Yes.
So let's talk about management itself then. You've got a long career in this space in a quite a multifaceted way in management as well. What changes have you noticed over the years from your perspective?
Well, the music industry really has transformed dramatically. I mean, when I first started, CDs were the rage. We would have CD singles, we would have CD albums, but I'm sure that now most of the Gen Zs have never even had a CD in their hand. I mean, let's not even talk about it.
I think they're making a bit of a comeback, you know. I think they're like, much like vinyl and cassettes have, I think we may be on the cusp of a CD comeback.
Vinyl has definitely something. Cassettes, definitely. Who knows? Maybe CDs. We'll have to get new CD players, though, because we can't have CDs without CD players.
Right.
But the way artists make money has completely evolved. And it's not about album sales. It's really about single streaming, not even album streaming, single streaming because of the playlist way of streaming music. And live performance, merch, and even the digital platforms are now a way to monetize content. So creating content and monetizing content through digital platforms, it definitely has changes the consumption, the patterns, and the way of people of accessing music. Now people can access music everywhere and so much. So competition is also tougher. So in terms of management, it's definitely a whole different way of approaching management.
Yeah, Black Eyed Peas, for instance, were one of the biggest selling CD artists of that. They were in that sweet spot at that time of when CD sales were the highest. They were selling, you know, I think tens of millions of CDs. And of course, now, like you say, you're approaching it from a single song perspective, you know, where single songs get put into playlists and people find them. Strategically, how does that work with an artist like that? Because you can think historically, and you still see this now, big artists, they'll say, right, we're going to release an album. Then that album becomes the basis of a tour and we have a promotional cycle around the album. But is that, there must be other ways of doing it now. Does that affect your decision-making?
Well, it affects it. It definitely affects it. But it's changing completely. Now, releasing just an album because we're linking it to a tour could jeopardize streaming. Because in the streaming world, ideally, you would do single, and then bundle it in an album. So you would want to have as many singles out there before having an album in terms of streaming. But then when you put together a tour, you'd like to put together a tour because of an album release. So we are, I think, now in the past 2-3 years, and maybe probably in the next coming years, in a situation of big change of, are we touring because we have an album, or do we have an album and because of that, or thanks to that, we go touring?
And going back to your observations on the management space, from a sort of, let's say, music industry cultural perspective, you know, the music industry has changed in those sort of infrastructure ways, as you mentioned. But what about the sort of culture of around being a manager? You mentioned earlier how management is a lot about being considerate for the well-being of the artist. Now, that is a big change recently from management. But is there anything else from your sort of your perspective connecting with the industry as a manager?
I mean, I think the industry has evolved, but in a way, I mean, I personally love the way it has evolved, just because it has to do with competence and expertise more than it had to do with bluffing or connections. You know, maybe a couple of years ago with the connections, you would go a long way, and probably with bluffing, you would go even a further way. But now with these changes, I think the industry really recognizes the importance of what you truly know and what you truly can do. And no more bluffs, no more smoke and mirrors.
Right. And which is a good thing. I mean, what about changes that you would like to see happen, you know, in whether it's in the management space or in the wider industry?
I think competence and expertise are even more crucial, but there's still room for improvement. The ideal scenario would be that the industry would have a success based on skills and knowledge and availability to innovate. That's a big one. Innovation is something that is extremely important, rather than who you know and how good you are to sell an image.
Hmm. And then looking forwards then, how do you see the role of manager evolving over the next sort of 5 to 10 years? Because you've just described a bunch of changes that are fairly fundamental. As you look forward, what changes do you foresee?
I think the role of the music manager is evolving significantly, and especially with all the ongoing digital revolution. Managers will need to adapt with digital trends and be more likely to change than the traditional music business has changed until now.
In recent years, we've seen, you know, the traditional structure of the music industry has sort of exploded a bit. And actually now you can have a management team that does everything. The management team can be the label, can be the marketing department, can be the A&R people. Do you see that happening more? Do you see, you know, one of the things artists talk about a lot is they want this direct to fan relationship that used to be mediated by, for example, a label or a platform, but now often managers seem to be given the task of creating this direct connection. So is this a trend you see continuing, where actually the management team becomes pretty much everything in the artist's life?
Yes, I could not agree more. If it actually becomes, or if the management team has the knowledge to do it, because I think one thing is to have the knowledge, and one thing is to actually roll it out and have it to do, and to put it in practice. But yes, I could not agree more. I do think that managers will need to have a deep understanding of streaming platforms, but social media and digital marketing and all the technologies, the VRs, the ARs, the AIs. I mean, there's plenty more of these abbreviations, but we will need to know and analyze to be able to do it ourselves. And then data analytics will become crucial, even more. So we will need to understand everything of how to move on between marketing, but even just planning a tour. And all of that will probably be linked to, again, knowledge, know-how, and analyzing data.
Yeah. And like you say, AI is going to be such a fundamental part of our lives going forward. And if there's one artist who I can imagine would embrace AI, it would be Will.i.am. In fact, Will.i.am, I'll give you that idea for free.
One more important thing, I think specifically with Gen Zs, I think we will have to, or thanks to Gen Zs, we will have to have a stronger focus on social and environmental responsibilities. I think this is really something that managers should be guiding the artists to, a more conscious impact to, well, they should have a more conscious impact in general. If it's touring, specifically touring, but in general, I think that's really something that the fans are requesting, and 2024, 5, 6, 7, 8 is requesting too. So between the skills and success of adapting and learning, continuously learning, and having a technological proficiency. Those are the key factors of what would a manager need in the future, or at least.
And they're potentially a very different role. You know, when you're thinking of all those skills around, especially around green technology and planning in environmental ways, that's something that a manager even 5 years ago wouldn't have have thought about doing. So that's a very different way of looking at it. Well, thanks, Rachel. I've got one final question for you, and this is more of a sort of directed at you, the individual. To contextualize all of this, we've talked about the music business quite a lot, but in terms of music, if you could only pick one piece of music to listen to for the rest of your life, what would it be?
Huh, this is a hard one. I have three favorite songs.
Okay, I'll let you have three. I'll let you have three. Go on, tell me the three.
So, well, I have I do really love the Where is the Love? Where is the Love of the Black Eyed Peas is okay. a big one for me, and it always has been. And Over the Rainbow, I absolutely love Over the Rainbow.
Right.
Well, actually, I think I'm going to stay. And I heard this beautiful remix of Rehab and Gattuso of Freaks, which okay. I also really enjoy. So I think those are my top threes.
Okay, great. Well, I will put a link to those beneath the podcast and people can listen to those as well for a little bit of extra context around you, Rachel. But Rachel Strasberger, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you, Joe.
So thank you again to Rachel. If you found that interview useful, please share the podcast on with someone who you think will take something from it. And if you want to get in touch with me, I would, of course, love to hear from you. You can email me on joe@musically.com, link below as well. We also have a free weekly email called The Knowledge, which rounds up bits and pieces of the best analysis, news, marketing, insight, and skills from across Music Ally's broad range of services. So sign up and become a better person. Links are in the description as always. That's it. Thanks for listening. I've been Joe Sparrow. You've been you. And until next time, farewell.